are listening to the most original talk radio station anywhere. We are LA Talk Radio at latalkradio.com.
You're listening to State of the Arts with Michael Sterling and Paul Strolley right here on LA Talk Radio.
Welcome. I'm Michael Sterling.
And I am Paul Strolling.
And welcome to State of the Arts.
As always, powered by Breakdown Services. It's good to be back, huh, Michael?
Very nice. After a nice summer week, which we didn't acknowledge last Monday, Paul.
That's right.
It was the beginning of summer last Monday.
The 21st.
Right.
Nice way to do it, and so nice to be stuck in a studio on that day, too.
Yes. It was. But at least we have sunshine to look at on the outside of the studio, right?
Right.
Important.
Right. We have a lot going on today. Excuse me one second. We have a lot going on. We have two guests with us, one of which is going to speak to us from New York. That is Tom Viola, who is the executive director of Broadway Cares Equity Fights AIDS. And in studio, we have actor, writer, and musician Tucker Smallwood. Tucker, thank you for joining us here today.
My pleasure.
Welcome.
And Tucker is from the production of Tracers that Loft Ensemble is doing downtown that we reviewed a couple of weeks ago, and we really look forward to talking to him about that later in the hour. But first thing I wanted to mention, Michael,
yes.
We talked about, I don't know if it was last week or the week before.
It was last week.
We were talking about theatrical nightmares.
Yes.
We've asked people to email in with their theatrical nightmare stories, worst
yes.
thing to happen to them on stage.
And we got many, many responses.
Yeah.
So that's exciting, and we're culling through them.
Yes.
But you know what I thought would be fun to do is start off with some of our own personal experiences.
Well, do tell. Do you want to start or should I?
You want me to start this? Do
Please
you really?
Do. Please
All right.
do.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, before I became a radio personality with Paul Strolley, I actually did have a career in acting. As a child, I was in the theater and started professionally in the theater and then went on to television and film. And lo and behold, one of the shows that I did growing up for years and years and years was a show called Bye Bye Birdie. Do you remember that musical? I did it with everybody from George Gobel to Jerry Van Dyke to Dick Van Dyke.
Not his real name, by the way.
What?
No, he changed it. Dick
really?
Van Dyke, yeah. His real name actually was Penis Van Lesbia.
Oh.
And he okay, it's an old one.
It's a
but
cheap
come
shot,
on.
But somebody had to say
come
it,
on.
Right?
It's an old joke.
Dick was a nice man and gave me many pointers, as did his brother, actually, and as did George Gobel. But I played the character of Harvey Johnson, which is really just an elevated ensemble member of the teen ensemble, if you will. And we were in, at that time, Theater in the Round was a major, major hit in all of California and throughout the country. So you would play these big, big theaters in the
right.
round. And I was playing, actually, it was a California production at the Santa Monica Civic Auditorium, which had been converted to a Theater in the Round of 3,000 people.
Oh, wow.
So if you know the show, at the opening of the show, Conrad Birdie is leaving New York City, going to Sweet Apple, Ohio, to kiss a young lady, which is a promotional thing for him going into the Army
right,
and saying
sure.
goodbye to all of his fans.
Yeah.
So the show opens in New York, and we start, the hoopla in New York, and we're waving goodbye to Conrad, and all of a sudden, in a 20-second change, we're underdressed, right? We have New York clothes on. We underdress for Sweet Apple, Ohio, in a strobe light with 3,000 people around us. Very, manic change, and we're peeling clothes off, and dressers are coming on stage in the dark, and they're taking the clothes that we're shedding off of the stage. Lights come up. I'm standing there waving an American flag in a red sweater, white shirt, little collar there, and I look down, and I'm in my dance belt. Because I forgot to put my pants on.
And as we all know, and Tucker, I don't know if you know, but the dance belt is sort of the equivalent, the theatrical equivalent of an ice-cold ocean.
Yes.
Would be. And it's
3,000 people, though, in some way got their money's worth in that show, don't you think?
Yeah, and the only view better of the front of a dance belt is the back.
Is the back.
Belt. That's
yeah.
the...
And at that young age, it wasn't too bad. But you, Paul, what
mine
about
is
you?
Not nearly that fun.
No?
I had a gun pulled on me, a loaded police issue 38 was pointed at me when I was doing... Tony and Tina's Wedding in Chicago. The first production in Chicago, I played Vinnie Black, the Cadillac of caterers. It was really a stretch for me. I had to play an obnoxious Italian. So I followed myself around for a year on that one. But there's a point in the show where we would take one of the characters out and supposedly rough him up, but it was all choreographed or whatever. We'd go outside the theater. And we left the front of the theater, which was basically in the Piper's Alley Mall, where Second City took place on the second floor, and we were up on the third floor, so that, that area was common. There were restrooms and a theater up there. So I come out of the theater, and I'm doing my Vinnie Black thing. It's okay. Don't worry about it. Everything's going to be okay. Enjoy the wedding. It's a beautiful thing. It's a beautiful thing. And the doors, we shut the doors, and I turn around, and a guy has the gun leveled directly at me because we were pretending to rough this guy up, but it was all choreographed. And he's just got the gun, you know, leave him alone, leave him alone. Off-duty Chicago cop who's walking around with this Bernard Goetz mentality. Is like he's got a gun in his pocket. He's like, you know, one of these days I'm going to find me a lawbreaker. You know? So, but the funniest thing was, it's just that, you know, the whole thing about Tony and Tina's was don't, you know, don't break character, don't break character, stay in character.
Of course.
You, you never saw three Italian guys break character faster in your life. Oh, it's just like, it's okay, take care of us, no big deal. Oh, it's the play, it's the play, it's the play. We're doing a play. I studied theater, and that's, please don't kill me, sir. So it was, yeah, just...
And, you know, and what you're saying is it rings true. And this it did not happen to me, but it did happen to a friend of mine. And it's a Hollywood theater, so I'm going to leave that nameless because in case somebody should get wise and want to try to do it again. But this woman was actually doing this play. This is a woman who's headlined my nightclub. I have a nightclub here, Tucker, for dedicated to the best of Broadway performers in concert. And she's a wonderful singer doing this play, this musical, at this theater on Santa Monica Boulevard in Hollywood. So that in itself speaks volumes right there. And as the performance is going on, someone comes through the front door of the theater and holds up the entire audience and the actors on the stage. And not only do he and his accomplice rob the entire audience, watches money going right row to row with a bag and to the poor actors on the stage, and then leave, taking two of the audience members' cars with them. But I must say, in the truest sense of show business, the show resumed.
Really?
After this, yeah.
Oh,
it resumed.
See, now that I don't understand. Well, you know, I got to say, hearing that story, I'm happy to hear that the audience got robbed too. And the only reason I say that is because the actors always get the short end of the stick. And you only need to look at the design of a theater to see where the actor is on the totem pole. The fire curtain is the best example of that. Protects the audience. Forget the fact that it turns the stage into a chimney. You're burned to cinders if you happen to be on stage. But if you're in the audience, you walk out leisurely.
It's true. Well, I mean, many stories we can tell, and we hope that, that all of you listening to us out there, keep those emails coming in. We're sorting through them. We want to hear your
own. Yes, it's stateofthearts.la@gmail.com. Send your stories in there. We're going to, and we'll get you some free theater tickets as a thank you. Now we're going to move on to talk to Mr. Tom Viola, who I believe we have on the line. Tom, are you there?
Yes, I am. How are you, Michael and Paul?
I am fine, Tom Viola. Nice to meet you, sir. Thank you so much for joining us. I know it's late for you back in New York. And you're still in your office, so how dedicated is that?
we're busy here. We're having a very, you know, very good season, very productive, productive fundraising season. So happy to be here a little bit late.
Well, I know that one of your big events that you have every year just took place in New York and was quite successful on Broadway Bears. Am I correct?
Yes, indeed. In fact, when you were telling that story about losing your pants in Bye Bye Birdie...
Thanks for bringing that up again.
It's actually very similar to what we did with about 217 dancers at Roseland Dance Hall this past Sunday.
Yeah, but see, that was...
A lot of pasties and dance belts.
But that was intentional, Tom. There's a big difference between that and Michael's performance.
So does that mean that I can be in the show next year, Tom?
You know, Michael, we'd love that, but I think you've aged out.
Oh, yes.
Just a bit.
No, I personally think that Broadway Care should expand into science fiction. I think that would be a good thing.
Yeah, good. Good idea.
Such a
good
cruel, cruel world. Tom, we want to talk about you and the wonderful work that Broadway Care's Equity Fights 8 AIDS does, and because it's one of the nation's leading industry-based not-for-profit fundraising and grant-making organizations. So tell us a little bit about it. I know that you've been around since 1988, and you've raised over $175 million for the much-needed services of people living with HIV/AIDS and their families.
We have, actually. It's been extraordinary. I mean, when you talk about how much we've raised and how long we've been doing it, I mean, the thing to keep in mind is that when we began doing this in 1988, we were two separate organizations, Equity Fights AIDS, coming out of Active Equity Association, which has a big office there in Los Angeles, as well as one here in New York.
Yes.
And Broadway Cares. And, you know, we started extraordinarily small. I mean, really, literally trying to figure out how to do a bake sale in the lobby of Katz. And it has grown extraordinarily over the last 22 years, thanks particularly to the amazing support of the theater community, not only here on Broadway, but also the national touring shows, theaters across the country. I mean, I know shows that have played the Pantages and
yes.
the Amundsen, and a number of theaters in Los Angeles have participated with audience appeals. We also fund a lot of organizations in Los Angeles. Last year in 2009, we sent about $300,000 to about 25 AIDS service organizations in Los Angeles and then California. I mean, literally in 48 states. So it's a tremendous operation, but I do know that what we've all done together, both folks on stage and their audiences and volunteers of every stripe, have literally made a huge difference in the lives of many men, women, and children, literally tens of thousands, families by every definition of that word, across the country.
Well, you know, in our own humble way here at State of the Arts, because we chose you, your organization, Broadway Cares, Equity Fights AIDS, and the Los Angeles Stage Alliance, to be two recipients of partial proceeds from our sponsorship money. So we hope in our own way, Tom, that over the long run of our relationship that we will be contributing to your success. But I'm looking here at a document that is staggering numbering that with the numbers that are registering here on an annual fundraising effort on behalf of your organization for 2009, almost $8 million. And this seems to be an average based on the $175 million that you've raised today.
Yeah, I mean, that's the actual cash grants that we sent out in 2009. In 2008, that was nearly 10. We had to make some cuts last year because, like everybody, we took a little bit of a hit in the economy. But I'm happy to say that, you know, that much of that is being restored this year. In 2010. And that money goes two directions. Half of it easily goes to what's called the Actors Fund of America.
Yes.
Which is the employee assistance program of the entertainment industry.
Mm-hmm.
They have an office here in New York, one in Chicago, and a big one in Los Angeles. But basically, anyone who makes any kind of living in the entertainment industry, in the theater community, that would be on stage, backstage, producer's office, crew, musicians, whatever you do, you qualify for assistance at the Actors Fund. And those programs are a safety net. They're not going to pay your Visa card. they're not going to pay off, the payments on your car.
Right,
they'll tell you, they'll keep you insurance payments. They'll keep you in your apartment. They'll help you through a lot of the red tape of the bureaucracy of finding assistance in a way that really keeps you from hitting, a really hard, rock bottom so that you can sort of recover and get back to work and get back to, some semblance of what your life was before. I mean, and I'm happy to say, too, that while we initially began funding just the AIDS initiative, Broadway Cares, Equity Fights AIDS now funds about seven programs at the Actors Fund, the Phyllis Newman Women's Health Initiative, the Hirschfeld Free Clinic, three supportive housing residences, including the Palm View in Los Angeles, basically so that everybody in the theater community here in New York and across the country who help us raise these funds have access to these services and can make use of what I like to call a safety net.
One of the things that you said, Tom, I hope I didn't interrupt you, but I had no idea, in looking at this material, where the money goes and all that, I had no idea the scope of the, you mentioned the AIDS initiative, the Phyllis Newman Women's Health Initiative, but the food service, I want to share these numbers with people. The food service and meal delivery programs, 100 organizations in 32 states, local grants of 362 organizations in 44 states, that's inclusive of housing programs, health clinics, case management, emergency financial assistance, harm reduction programs. I mean, it really is, you so deserve to be applauded for the scope of this work.
Thank you.
Really is impressive.
And, you know, of course, Paul and the rest of you listening across the country and around the world, Tom Viola was recognized sooner it should have happened, Tom, in my estimation, but it certainly was a beautiful moment on the Tony Awards this year on June 13th when you were honored by the Tony Awards for your work with Broadway Cares and Equity for Arts. Well, tell me about how that felt for you. I mean, it must have been the total sum of everything that you live and breathe every day.
You know, it was extraordinary. Here's the thing about that award. The award really, you know, is about how the theater community has made a place for Broadway Cares so that when Equity Fights Aid, so that we can do this work. You know, that I would be singled out or that my name is, you know, on this piece is really it's just a bonus. It's amazing. But there are, you know, there's 38 folks on the staff here who make this all happen. There are, you know, hundreds and hundreds of volunteers. And truly, I'm really, the award is wonderful. You know, what I'm most grateful for is the opportunity it's given me to have a meaningful life. It's extraordinary. And, you know, it's something that I will always treasure because of what it will remind me of.
Wow. Well, you gave a beautiful speech the night before the actual Tonys when you were given this award.
Oh,
and yeah, it was very, very heartfelt. And I noticed you bought a suit actually for it.
I did.
You made mention of that in your speech, I think, as I recall.
Well, I went to the Tony nominee luncheon that they give. That's not for the press. They just invite all the nominees and the folks getting the special awards and the Tony honors to it was a very nice luncheon at the Plaza, and they take this sort of yearbook shot of everybody on the steps. And I arrived, now it was very warm, but I arrived in a tie, but just basically in shirt sleeves. You know, I looked presentable, but I looked around and I thought, oh my God, nearly everybody here is in a suit. I think I better, you know, splurge here and do something.
Well, you looked lovely on the video that I saw. That's for sure.
Now, Tom, before we wrap it up, because we actually do have to, but I the most important thing is getting the funds to you. So would you please tell all of the listeners, if they want to make a donation to Broadway Cares, Equity Fights AIDS, how they go about that?
Well, you know, the best thing, I mean, if you want to make a donation, if you want to learn about anything that we do, if you want to see videos and photos of many of our events, including Broadway Bears, anything Broadway Cares, Equity Fights AIDS you want to know, go to the website, which is BroadwayCares, all one word, .org, BroadwayCares.org. There is a wealth of information there. You can spend hours surfing and making a donation, reading about past events, and literally you can find out where in every state and every city we've made donations. So, you know, I would encourage people to go there, and certainly we would very much appreciate the support.
Well, and we will make sure that people have that address before we close out this episode of our series. And, Tom, on a personal note, I just want to direct something back to you for a moment.
Sure.
We, aside from all this extraordinary work that you do, your biography was so interesting to us that you actually co-wrote with Colleen Dewhurst her biography, which was published, of course,
yes,
in 1996.
When Equity Fights AIDS actually first started, I was working up at Actors Equity Association as Colleen's assistant. She was the president at the time.
Yes.
But that was about 1988. And Colleen was very instrumental in Equity Fights AIDS finding its feet and was insistent that we collaborate closely with Broadway Cares, making the merger in 1992, about a year after her death, very possible. So during that time, yes, indeed, I worked with her for about 2 years on the book together, and then when she died, it was maybe half done. And no one was sure what was going to quite happen with it, but I determined that I would interview it, but it turned out being about 50 folks, people she worked with, friends, family, her dresser, I mean, all sorts of folks.
My Lord.
To basically tell the part of the story that Colleen couldn't, or adding another viewpoint to something that she'd talked about. And, you know, I think all of us together, Colleen and all of us, ended up with a book that I think we all, and that she would be very proud of.
And we will put put that on our website as well, not only the Broadway Cares Inn, but also, because I think people would be very interested in that.
Yeah, so, you can, you know, it's hard to find in bookstores these days. I mean, it pretty much sold out of its first printing, about 10 years ago. But you can go on Amazon or BarnesandNoble.com, certainly, and usually find it. To tell you the truth, I bought a few copies myself.
Oh, you did you?
So that I would have some.
Thank you so much, Tom. We're going to move
Tom,
on.
What a pleasure.
But thank you so much for joining
us. Very nice
to
meet you both.
Thank you.
And we will put that stuff on the site. Thank you so much, Tom, and we will chat soon.
Great. Thanks a lot, guys.
Have a great evening.
Bye-bye.
That was great. That was great. It was good to talk
Lovely
to
man. Him. Lovely man. In his bio, it was very funny. It says that he lives with some madcap mutts, Maggie and Squirrel, and three shady cats, Ed, Earl, and Putty, and he vacuums as often as he shaves. What a great way to end bio, right?
Yeah, well, makes you talk about it. We should also acknowledge Breakdown Services. Breakdown Services Limited is a global communications network and casting system that provides the most professional means to reach talent agents as well as actors when casting a project. We are grateful to Breakdown Services for being our presenting sponsor. And we also want to move on into our weekly live arts calendar.
Absolutely.
Michael, do you want to kick that off?
Absolutely. And more or less in honor of the fact that we had the pleasure and honor of having Tom Viola on the air with us today, we're going to focus a little bit on New York and tell you about the shows that are playing currently on Broadway, blending the legendary vocals of Frank Sinatra with a live orchestra on stage. Come Fly Away, the new musical from Twyla Tharp, follows four couples as they fall in and out of love during one song and dance-filled evening at a crowded nightclub. Don't miss it, now playing at the Marquee Theater on Broadway with Tony Award nominees Corinne Plantated. Corinne Plantated and Keith Roberts.
The Tony Award-nominated Lend Me a Tenor with Anthony LaPaglia, Tony Shalhoub, and Justin Bartha on stage at Broadway's Music Box Theater is a madcap screwball comedy. Do those words ever, are they ever separated? Is it always madcap screwball or screwball madcap? I don't know.
Madcap screwball.
Madcap screwball comedy that takes place when a fiery-tempered and world-famous Italian superstar arrives in Cleveland, Ohio to make his debut with the local opera and promptly goes missing.
Beginning July 13th, Tony Award winners Bernadette Peters and Elaine Stritch illuminate A Little Night Music at the Walter Kerr Theater on Broadway. Based on the Ingmar Bergman film Smiles of a Summer Night, this first ever witty, urbane, and erotic waltz musical directed by Trevor Nunn is in revival and explores love's endless possibilities.
How do they create the magic you see under the big top? Acrobats, jugglers, and aerialists demonstrate how circus skills become a theatrical act. Learn the lingo, see practice become performance with Troupe Vertigo at the Ford Amphitheater in the Hollywood Hills, July 3rd only. And Michael, you mentioned that this is an early performance. So
this is an early performance, a daytime performance, actually.
Okay, so good to know. Bring the kids to that.
Absolutely. Family event. King Lear, one of the greatest and most powerful dramas in Western literature, is the ultimate family drama told against a background of intense political intrigue. Presented by the Old Globe at their Lowell Davis Festival Theater in San Diego, California, King Lear continues through September 23rd.
And now through July 23rd at West Hollywood's Coast Playhouse, JD Theatrical presents Yellow, the critically acclaimed world premiere play by award-winning playwright Del Shores, which chronicles a year in the life of what seems to be the perfect family in Vicksburg, Mississippi.
And every one of Del's plays are extraordinary, so we need to go see this.
Okay, then
we need
will.
To go see this. And for further information, ladies and gentlemen, about any productions and or events mentioned on today's State of the Arts live calendar, visit us during the week ahead at stateoftheartsla.com.
Moving on, we want to introduce our next guest, our in-studio guest today, Mr. Tucker Smallwood, who is currently performing, well, not currently because they're taking a little bit of a hiatus, and then they resume, I believe, a week from Saturday. This production of John DeFusco's seminal play about the Vietnam War and the veterans and their experiences, Tracers, playing with the L.A. Fringe Theater, but it's being presented by Loft Ensemble. Tucker, thank you so much for being with us today.
Welcome, Tucker.
Thank you. It's nice to be here.
Absolutely.
Tucker, would you just kick it off? I saw this play, and we reviewed it a couple of weeks ago, but initially what I'm most interested in, given your history, being a Vietnam veteran yourself, having written a book about your experiences, how did you become aware of this project?
Well, its creator, John DeFusco, and I have been good friends for almost 30 years now. We had worked together in New York City. There was a wonderful production by HBO in the 80s called Dear America, Letters Home from Vietnam.
I remember it.
And John had recommended me to the director of that, and I became one of the readers of the letters. And we've maintained a contact and friendship through these years. Several years ago, he introduced me to Rogue Machine, which has become my theater company here in Los Angeles. And in late winter, John said, you know, they're going to do a production of Tracers here, and I'd like you to meet with the director, Christina Joy Howard. Her mother is Vietnamese. She has some interesting ideas. And I've recommended you to her to perform as the drill instructor, Sergeant Williams. And I said, well, I'd certainly be happy to meet with her. I don't know any conflicts immediately ahead of me that, you know, might interfere with that. But I wanted the director to get a sense of who I am and how I operate, and I wanted to get a sense of her. She is very, very dedicated to a theatrical concept called viewpoints, which involves physicality. And I went down to a workshop one evening. I live in the San Fernando Valley in Tarzana, and the theater is downtown near Little Tokyo. And this wonderful loft space. I lived in lofts for about 8 years in New York. I love lofts. It's a very gracious way to live.
And it's a great space. It really is.
It is. And I watched her work with some of her fellow company members. I liked her passion, her enthusiasm, her assurance. And I just, you know, I'm a very instinctive kind of a person. I got a good vibe. And I told her, listen, I'm no day at the beach. I'm opinionated. I will be involved. But I think I can help your company approach the realities of what it is to be a young man at war and afterwards. And so let's give it a shot.
And I'm curious about, you know, as I said, I saw the play, and the drill instructor that you play, I was describing that character to somebody and talking about the play, and what I had said was it sort of makes Lou Gossett's character from Officer and a Gentleman look like Gomer Pyle. He's a very serious man about what he does, and were you pulling from personal experience for that? Or?
Well, I was a TAC officer. After being commissioned as an infantry commander, actually an infantry second lieutenant, I had orders for Special Forces and Old Guard. And the Army pulled those orders and made me a TAC. At that time, training future officers was the highest priority in the Army. Mm. And it meant that I got to spend another 6 months of my life in hellish conditions, because I'm no longer being dropped and harassed and chased. I am waking them up and putting them to bed and counseling them and advising them and overseeing them. So another 6 months of sleepless life. But it is very important work, and I was not a very nice person. I didn't particularly like myself, but every man that I passed on was going to be responsible for 44 American lives. It was incredibly important. And I had to break some hearts. Some of the guys that I drove out were perfectly fine human beings and would be perfectly capable in other slots, but they weren't meant to be infantry commanders.
Mm-hmm.
And a large part of my job was pushing men past what they had any concept they could deal with. Past fatigue, past frustration, past exhaustion, past fear, past pressure, and seeing who could bounce back and who just chucked it up.
Now, in the actual play, when Paul reviewed it, he came back and mentioned this particular thing, which I found fascinating. As the audience enters the theater, they're watching the actors do, 10, 15 minutes of calisthenics, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
This is a combination of the concepts of viewpoints.
Right.
Finding freedom and access to your character through physicality. And so Christina incorporated it into the pre-show, as it were. And earlier you were talking about mishaps on stage.
Yes, and you had to bring that up again.
During our opening night, I, as the shaman, enter the stage and create a sacred circle and offer prayers to the four directions and grandmother and grandfather sky. And I had a lovely piece of chunk of sage, and they had a ceiling fan that was on, and it had never been on before, and it made my sage go absolutely berserk. And so suddenly it's billowing smoke, and the theater is becoming harder and harder to see from point A to point B, and I am wondering, okay, We certainly cleared the space. Now, I resume my spot downstage front, and I'm stuffing my bundle of sage into a little flower pot, but it's not going out. I can tell because the smoke is surrounding me. And so I thought, well, I could spit, I could pee. That would be unseemly. And then it occurred to me that I have a medicine pouch, and I have a small flask of spirits. In my case, it's rum. And I poured my rum. It's good that it wasn't high proof rum. If it had been 160 proof rum, it could have been a whole nother story. But I managed to I managed to extinguish the smoke, and the show went on. But the reviewers acknowledged this thickening, almost choking sage gives you such an ambiance and an atmosphere of theater.
Well, so it's accidents can be beneficial.
Well,
right?
Yeah, there's the great story of Kevin Kline was doing Hamlet, and he the to be or not to be speech. He was so nervous the night before because he was like, I'm going to screw up the to be or not to be speech, and I'm going to go down in history as the guy who screwed up the most famous speech in history. He gets on stage, it's opening night, he says to be, and he goes completely up, and he paces the stage for about 45 seconds, and then it comes to him, and he says, or not to be, and he continues the speech, and every paper the next day, the first new interpretation of the to be or not to be speech. It's just, you know, it's a complete mistake. But getting back to what you said, Tucker, I'm glad you mentioned the shaman, because this other character that you portray is specific to this show. This did not exist in the original draft. I found that very interesting when we discussed that. Was that a directorial choice? Was it a communal choice?
The concept is entirely a construct of Joy Howard, the director. She said, I want a shaman. I want a spiritual presence. And I ran with it and fleshed him out and gave him rituals. I gave him a look. I chose an Apache. Native Americans were very, very involved in our struggle in Vietnam. And I like the mysticism and the ritualistic aspects of the spirituality of Native Americans. Okay. I think it's very exciting when you consider that this is a very, very, as you said, seminal piece of theater that's been performed all over the world for the past 30 years. And this director has come up with a new, nonverbal, but very, very present character.
And I would call him the author, but it was communally created by Vietnam veterans, but it was definitely John DeFusco's baby. It definitely was.
Absolutely right. This was, if you remember, Chorus Line was workshopped for many months.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
Tracers was done in the same way. It started out here at the Odyssey Theater, mm-hmm. and Vietnam veterans came together
and workshopped. It started at the Odyssey?
It did.
Oh, wow.
It was first performed here, and then it moved to Joe Papp's Public Theater in New York.
I did not
Fantastic.
Know that originated
well,
here.
And I've seen things at the Odyssey, too, that have followed a similar path. I mean, they do some amazing work there.
And I forgot the history of the Odyssey and how long that they've
Absolutely.
Been around. Now, Mr. DeFusco, is he actively involved in this production?
John has been there almost nightly. And it
wow.
is I've told him privately. He's like this deity to these young cast members. John was here. John's in the house. I know. I saw him during my monologue. John DeFusco's here. Mm-hmm. It's sort of like, you know, Shakespeare or Ibsen wandering into the theater.
Mm-hmm.
And the actors are in awe. But he's been very, very supportive.
And a phenomenal troupe of young actors it is, Michael. We discussed that earlier, that it's just, you know, when... It is really imperative, I think, that people get downtown, go to Little Tokyo. No one has a right to complain about the state of theater in Los Angeles when productions like this are going on. It's a phenomenal experience, and it's the whole evening. I've always, promotionally, when I've promoted shows, I've always promoted them like, you don't pitch the show, you pitch the evening. And this is an evening. From when you walk in, one of the things that's so... hypnotic about the play is the depth of the space. It's probably the deepest theater of that size I've ever been. Tucker said it was sort of like a loft space. You're sitting in the main, you know, seating area for the audience, and you're looking straight back. It's got to be what, 25, 30 feet straight?
I think probably close to 40.
Yeah, and it's just, and it's, it, you really feel it. you feel, in a strange way, the isolation of these men, because it's rare that you're on a stage and there's that much emptiness around them. And I think it's one of the things that, in a reverse effect, if you watch the beginning of Platoon, and you watch the beginning of that film, and Oliver Stone has the camera in so tight for about, I think, 15 minutes of the start of that film, and the foliage and the leaves are just coming over the lens and over the lens, and you're just like, all right, back the F up already, you know, just get me out. And then you realize that that's the intention, you know, to just, sure. You don't know what's going to come around. You don't know what's going to jump out at you. We don't have a lot more time, Tucker, but I wanted to ask you something about your own experience. You also wrote this book called Return to Eden, a compilation, an anthology of essays about your own experiences in Vietnam. And I'm curious, without prying too much, when you have to go to that mental place that all actors have to go to, is it disruptive? Is it challenging? Is it upsetting? Is it all of the above, given your personal history and your experiences there?
Well, it's a blessing that I am now able safely to deal with that material. I spent several hours talking to Francis Coppola in the 70s about Apocalypse, and there was a place to be made for me there, and I was studying with Stella Adler, and she said, you must not do that. You are not ready to work on that. You will come completely unglued. And she was quite right, and it took 4 or 5 more years for me to have a chance to work with Francis on The Cotton Club. My writing began as a function of my therapy. I was diagnosed with PTSD some 20 years ago, and part of that process of trying to heal was getting down all the memories and confronting all of the incompletions that I had emotionally in my life. And I loved that process of writing. And I love good fiction. I love to read it. I just don't think I write it particularly well. But I can look at anything that I write and say, yes, that's what happened. That's exactly what happened. That is true.
Well, I'm very, very grateful to you for coming in. I know, Michael, you are
absolutely.
Too.
I must tell you, Paul, and I know we have to close this up, but when I saw your photograph on your website there on the internet, I said to Paul, I said, my God, this man's face is so unbelievable. It's so strong and it's so specific, and it speaks. You know, a picture does speak a thousand words, and certainly in your case, perhaps more. And I said, he's got to have the voice to go along with this, which you clearly do. And then I'm looking at this man's resume from television and motion pictures and theater, and it's extraordinary. So I urge anybody that's listening to us, as Paul has so kindly reviewed in the past, and we've had the pleasure of having you on the show, go see this extraordinary play, Tracers.
Tracers, yes.
And go see our guest, Tucker Smallwood, and join his fellow castmates in putting on something that absolutely should be seen. I think it's important for it.
And once again, to recognize, I mean, we're lucky enough to have Tucker with us, but to truly recognize the work of the other young actors that are in this production. Really beautifully, beautifully executed, an excellent production, and really tried to catch it. And you have an opportunity that you wouldn't have had, because it was going to close last weekend, and now they're doing, it's just Saturday night through July 10th, right, Tucker?
It begins on July 10th, 6 weeks on Saturday nights only, that's
okay.
Correct.
Okay, so
it goes through August.
Through August, starts again July 10th through August, 6 weeks on Saturday nights only. I believe it's loftensemble.org or loftensemble.com, I'm not 100% sure, but Tucker will check on that, or Michael will check on that while we move on into the next thing, and we move into our reviews.
Loftensemble.com.
Yes. Loftensemble.com.
Thank you for being more prepared than I,
but thank you, Tucker. I appreciate it.
Can you stay with us for a couple of minutes?
Just
okay.
Oh, no, we can't have him leave. We can't handle that technical aspect.
There we go.
We do have two reviews.
Yes.
And perhaps I should segue into mine.
I think it would be appropriate. Yeah.
Because it is also themed about the war, sadly, but one of the most powerful plays about World War II is All My Sons. And I actually think that as much as I love Death of a Salesman, I think All My Sons is my favorite Arthur Miller play. This one is directed by Kif Scholl, who is an award-winning director in town. He does a lot of work with Theater of Note, another great company in town. And it is the inaugural production of Wasatch Theatrical Ventures. If I have that pronunciation wrong, please accept my apologies. It is playing through July 25th at the Raven Playhouse in North Hollywood. And All My Sons, Arthur Miller's first play. A lot of people don't know that. It was also the primary reason that he was called up for the House Un-American Activities Committee, because at that time, you really didn't question anything about America. And I suppose we should be thankful to the House Un-American Activities Committee in one regard, just because if they hadn't done that, we wouldn't have The Crucible 6 years later, which was his sort of thinly veiled description of that experience. But this particular production of All My Sons is really very, very good. Kif Scholl's direction is very tight, it's very concise, it's charged, and it's a difficult play from the kickoff, because just the way it's written, it starts at sort of this lazy Sunday, lazy afternoon. Mm-hmm. The entire play is the backyard of the family's home. And it starts out sort of sedentary, and this is not this production, this is textual. Sort of sedentary, sort of easygoing, and then the rocks get lifted, and then the cans are opened, and the worms come out, and all of this whole peel back, the layers of the onion come back, and it grows, and it grows, and it grows. And the way Kif Scholl has directed this, he really succeeds in letting us sort of slowly feel the weight of the subject matter. Because when you think about when this thing was written, you know, war profiteering and the battle of profits over safety, you know, sadly, that's like commonplace now. We only have to look at the Gulf to see that.
Right.
But at this time, it was really, you know, this was controversial stuff. There's a couple of performances I really want to point out in this particular production. There's an actor named Matt Shea, who plays Frank Ruby. Traditionally, in All My Sons, this is a fairly thankless role. He's sort of the quirky neighbor who's obsessed mm-hmm. with horoscopes and whatnot. But Matt really makes it his own. It's a very interesting portrayal. He does a great job with it. And there's, I think there's two women that really dominate this production. There's two actors, Lauren Dobbins Webb, who plays Ann Deaver, and Carol Ann Johnson, who plays Kate Keller being the mother and the wife of the main character, Joe Keller, and Ann Deaver being the love interest, who was originally the girl of the mm-hmm. of the son who was killed, and then becomes the girl, as it were, of the remaining son. And these two women just truly honor their roles with their performances. When these two are on stage, the connection that they have, I mean, the portrayals are very good, but they just, it's really electric when these two come together. It's great, great stuff. Carol Ann Johnson, especially as Kate Keller, is just this portrayal of this fractured mother just trying to keep her family together, and there's so much going on underneath the surface, and she's just really, really wonderful. So highly, highly recommend this one. And
now this is in NoHo at the Raven Playhouse, is that right?
Yeah, it's at the Raven Playhouse, and the goal of this Wasatch Theatrical Ventures is to present classic American plays in small spaces, and that's the only, for me, that's it's admirable that they're doing that, but this production is so poignant and so well executed that I actually found myself going, man, I wish they had a big room. Man, I wish they had a big room to do this, because I mean, they do it beautifully in a very, very tight space. The Raven ain't big, but it's really, really great. So I've gone on too much about
no,
this.
No, not at all, not at all. I commend them, because I love that area, NoHo, you know, which is our answer to another section of theater, a row, if you will, in Hollywood. It's the answer in the Valley, NoHo Arts District,
yeah,
as it were.
And they finally fixed that whole meter thing. They were doing something with the parking meters that you had to feed them every hour to 10 o'clock at night, which is great when you're going to the theater, but they've changed that now, so you can actually sit in the theater.
So how can people see this show?
Thank you so much. I just remembered that. For reservations for All My Sons, call 323-960-4420, or you can reserve online at www.plays411.com/sons. So, Michael, what
yes,
did you
well,
see?
Yes, well, while you were seeing something classic like All My Sons, I was seeing something classic in an entirely different way from an entirely different time, circa 1970s, and it's called Chips, the Musical. Yes, only in Los Angeles, Tucker, would this happen. You know that. And it opened at the beautiful Falcon Theater. I do stress the word beautiful there because it's a 130-seat house in Toluca Lake that is owned by Gary Marshall.
Right, right.
And what a lovely space it is. And once you walk in, there's a gorgeous stage. It's very large. The rake in the audience is perfect. They've got wonderful lighting, wonderful sound. And this particular world premiere, I might add, Chips the Musical, is presented by the Troubadour Theater Company, which is an improvisational group. And Paul, certainly, if anybody knows about improv, it's you. And it was written by Rick Battaglia and Henry Phillips and directed by Matt Walker. Now, Rick Battaglia and Matt Walker play the two lead characters, which, are, of course, you saw that television show, did you not? Chips, of course you did.
Yeah.
And they play, tongue-in-cheek, these two roles, and they put together this entire musical with 14 musical numbers in it. So while the uniforms of these two characters are sprayed on them, I mean, it might as well be sprayed on them, to the point where they cannot, if they have to sit down, it's 5 minutes in just sitting down. You know, so it's that kind of a take throughout the whole evening. They are hilarious. They're brilliant comedians, these gentlemen, and as are many of the other cast members that surround them throughout the play, and it's quite an interesting company. Michelle Ann Johnson, who plays Carmel, she's fantastic. She's an officer that joins them, actually becomes their captain at one point. Beth Kennedy, who is extraordinary as the KG Truby, and this is a band of lesbian women that are a part of the story, and goes on to...
So it's just like All My Sons, basically.
It is just, yeah. Yes, but it's in the other direction, on that other bus, you know. Joel McCrary, who plays Jim, wonderful, wonderful character actor, and an extraordinary singer, actually. Wouldn't think that they would be so mindful of having people that can actually sing in a takeoff like this. And Jackie Seldon, who was one of my personal favorites, is talking about singers and actresses, and pretty easy on the eyes, I might add, to look at through the entire production. But I must say that what they're doing is taking you on a journey down the 405 freeway, to sum it up, you know, during the 70s, and when highways were hopping and the surface streets were, you know, for sissies, and when you could get downtown and to the west side in, you know, in 20 minutes. And not just in a Toyota, by the way. And their whole understanding of this type of tongue-in-cheek improv theater is evidently clear. The audience was in hysterics from the moment it started to the end of the evening. Now, I must say for myself, looking at it with a more critical eye than the rest of the audience, which was skewing to be a fairly hip young crowd to kind of that mid early 40s hip crowd. I noticed there was lots of Corvettes in the parking lot there, and the joke wore a little thin after the first 20, 30, 40 minutes of it, and it was almost a 2-hour evening with no intermission. Actually, so if I have anything critical to say about it, it's that. But otherwise, I certainly acknowledge the fact that they did an amazing job as an ensemble, and they set out and accomplished what they set out to do.
There was a production that he was involved with a couple of years back that took place here in town, and it was called Blake the Musical, and it was around the Robert Blake thing, and that was truly one of them. I mean, I haven't laughed that hard in the theater in a long time. It was just so, because it was less an indictment of him and more just the media, you know, just the chumming the water, and you know, with the, you know, the press and how that just exploded into just the media mess that it was. But it was very, very funny. The songs were very clever, and more clever than they needed to be, I should say. You know, just, you know, very, very, very tightly done.
And this the same way. And to see this show, and another one I recommend it highly to be seen before it closes on July 25th, with a matinee performance on that particular day. And you can get tickets through the Falcon Theater by going to their website, falcontheater.com, or by calling 818-955-8101. And, Paul, I think that takes us right up to being out of time, does it not?
I think it does, yes. Tucker, do you have
I wanted to share with you a brief theater story about All My Sons, if I could.
You know what? I'm sorry you can't, because we're only about 30 seconds from the end, so we're
that means we're going to have you back.
We're at our 50 minutes, but we'll do a call-in, and we'll definitely get it. I'm sorry that we're unable to, but we have to say goodbye because we're at our 50 minutes. We have Sally Struthers next week.
Yes,
so
we do.
Join
from
us
All
again.
In the Family.
Tucker, thank you so much. We're very, very
what
grateful.
What a pleasure.
To have you. Thank
what
you
a,
so much.
And thank
we'll
you,
see
Tom
you all
Viola.
Later. Bye now.
You're listening to State of the Art with Michael Sterling and Paul Strolley right here on LA Talk Radio.